And a good Wednesday morning to you. Welcome into the Nick Craig Show, streaming live this morning on YouTube, Rumble, and X. And we start with the breaking news in Wilmington this morning as suspects are in custody following a SWAT response here in Wilmington. This happening in the overnight hours. At least two suspects are in custody after this situation unfolded. SWAT units were at and continue to be at least as of a little while ago, at Buckingham Ave and Troy Drive off at New Hanover Village, the apartment complex down there. According to WECT News and crews that they had on scene there, they observed units entering one of the buildings. One ambulance was seen leaving the scene and another arriving in a similar time frame. Law enforcement was communicating through a loudspeaker on a combat truck. Police units initially responded to a shooting at the Sand Ridge Apartments on Harbor Drive late Tuesday night. And WECT News there observed the crime scene investigation unit on the scene and officers searching the area with flashlights. Investigators have placed about 30 evidence markers that would probably indicate bullet casings on the ground there. A neighbor says they heard gunshots around 11 p.m. However, they say there does not appear to be anyone injured from the shooting. You can see all those evidence markers next to the apartment complex there, indicating likely some pretty heavy gunfire back and forth. We don't know exactly what's going on as of right now. I know that there are crews and units on the scene this morning. We'll check in here before the end of the show and see if we get any additional details. But that's the breaking news that we start off on this Wednesday morning. A lot going on across the country today. A lot going on in North Carolina. There is a meeting that will be taking place later on today up at the North Carolina General Assembly as lawmakers will be dealing with additional Hurricane Helene relief. We'll talk about that coming up a little bit later on this morning. Plus, we've got some USAID or US aid news as well that we'll have coming up for you shortly. However, we start with the United States Postal Service. Yesterday morning, we spent extensive time talking about tariffs, took up a vast majority of the show. And what we learned is that the tariffs that Trump was set to put on Mexico and Canada are on a temporary 30-day pause. That is because they have agreed to come to the bargaining table. And over the next 30 days, Marco Rubio, Secretary of State, and other individuals will negotiate with Canada, with Mexico, to hopefully come to some sort of agreement to not go forward with these tariffs, which I remain, in my opinion, that they will be detrimental to the U.S. economy, detrimental to the U.S. consumer. However, there are other tariffs that were levied against China, and China not as willing to come to the bargaining table as we have seen from our friends to the north and to the south between US, between Mexico and Canada. And we are learning as of late last night that the United States Postal Service is suspending the shipments of parcels from China, which of course would include Hong Kong. So over at Zero Hedge this morning, it reads as follows. The United States Postal Service has suspended inbound international packages from China and Hong Kong posts, delaying or blocking shipments from giant online retailers. Now, this does not include places like Amazon who are shipping in the United States, but this includes places like Shein and Temu, which are very, very popular and competitors to Amazon in some cases, but in other cases, very, very popular online shopping marketplaces in which all of the goods, all of the product is coming directly on a slow boat from China. The Postal Service said that letters and flat mail from China and Hong Kong will not be affected. And you can see the notice on their website. So this is going to include documents, letters, postcards, all of the other things that are not packages will still flow through the United States Postal Service, but we will not be seeing any of these packages coming forward. Now, we don't have any reasoning. We have not heard, at least none of the publications that I was looking at this morning had heard back from the Trump administration, had heard back from the Postal Service on the rationale, but it seems pretty likely that this could have something to do with the tariff discussion that has been going on. The Zero Hedge article reads as follows. Potential reasons behind the suspension could be to ensure that tariffs are enforced and not bypassed by potential loopholes such as exporting multiple packages of smaller value items. So if you've got this tariff going in effect between the United States and China, and we're putting a tariff on their goods, they could just, you know, break up the shipments, send smaller packages at a time, a way to skirt under that. And in this case, at least the notice that's on the Postal Service website would indicate that no packages, regardless of any size, are coming through unless it's in a letter envelope or some sort of legal, you know, manila folder kind of envelope or something of that nature. No packages are getting through. The article says, while it's not clear what prompted the move, it follows Trump's decision, and we talked about this yesterday, to revoke de minimis rule from China. Now, this is something that allows small packages under $800 in value, which is going to be a majority of the stuff that is being bought on Shein and Temu, to enter the United States duty-free. So no tariffs, no import tax, nothing of that nature. This exemption, often used by Chinese-linked e-commerce websites, was removed as part of the new 10% tariff on goods from China and Hong Kong, which took effect just after midnight on Tuesday here on the East Coast, so yesterday morning at 12:01. Washington is cracking down on a loophole that retailers like Temu and Shein have used for years to expand the United States, allowing them to ship high volume of small packages and gain an edge over competitors like Amazon. Critics say the flood of parcels from China is difficult to track and may contain illegal or dangerous goods. According to U.S. Customs and Border Protection data, which was quoted by Bloomberg, the total volume of these small shipments under $800 into the United States hit a whopping 1.4 billion packages. Not $1.4 billion, $1.4 billion individual packages in the fiscal year 2024. That was double the number that it was in 2022. Predictably, discount online retailers like Temu and Shein contributed significantly to the spike in that volume. However, disruptions from the move may be more limited now than it would have been in previous years, as other postal operators have taken over UPS's role in handling cross-border lightweight e-commerce packages, including those from China. So again, this is just the Postal Service, which is what the United States has control over. UPS, FedEx, DHL, they will still have to deal with the duty, the tariffs dealing with those products and those items coming in, but the federal government cannot force a full stop on those products. However, there will be the tariffs on those. U.S. officials have alleged that parcel mail direct from China and via third-party countries is a gateway for illicit drugs, including deadly fentanyl. White House trade advisor Peter Navarro told Politico at an event on last night, what the cartels in China have done is exploit that loophole to smuggle in not just fentanyl, but all sorts of drugs. So not only are they saying there's issues with these small products making their way across the border and them not, of course, falling under the tariff restrictions, but that there is a potentially, and I would presume they've got information to indicate that the volume is extensive, but the Trump administration seemingly indicating that there are a large volume of illegal, fake, in this case, drugs passing through the border, passing directly through the United States Postal Service. And it makes sense. You have 1.4 billion packages coming in from China. That just the Postal Service is dealing with. Many of these small items and services that you can buy, or small products and goods that you can buy over at Temu and Shein. It's completely impractical that the Postal Service could screen those products. There's no way to legitimately do that without completely bogging down and destroying the, well, reliability, maybe it's not the right word to use, but I'll call it the reliability of the Postal Service. It's completely impractical. But I can presume that because these actions are being taken, this administration has it on pretty good authority that this is what's going on and they're trying to put a stop to it. Shares of Alibaba fell more than 2% in Hong Kong, while JD.com tumbled more than 5%. In a Goldman Sachs note published late Tuesday, the bank tied to assets the impact of Trump's removal of the de minimis exemption on China's e-commerce platform, where Temu has the highest U.S. exposure amongst China cross-border players. So some big impacts here. Now, one thing I haven't done this morning, and I'll do it right now just thinking about it, is if you go to the Temu website, It looks like they've got an alert right here on their homepage. And if you've never gone to Temu before, I'm not encouraging you to buy anything there. Because now I don't even know how that would work. But it's amazing what they sell on Temu. I mean, you think Amazon is pretty cool? You can find pretty much anything that you buy on Amazon for the most part, unless you're buying a name brand like technology product or something like that. But if you're buying just tchotchke garbage like most of us do, you take that image or that product that you were going to buy on Amazon and go over to Temu, you'll find it for like sometimes 90% off, because the Chinese producers that are making the product just ship it right into the United States through Temu. So they've got a notice here and it says, do not click on any links or pay any fees if you receive a message claiming to be from USPS about delivery issues due to an incorrect address. You should check the status of your packet. Okay, so I guess that's not the alert, not the issue that we're reporting this morning. Just clicking on this sofa repair product. I'm just curious if there's any indication. And I guess there's something to note here. The shipping indicates multiple companies. Looking at the details here, looks like USPS, which of course is what we're talking about from Temu. You've got UPS, DHL, e-commerce, OnTrack, et cetera, et cetera. So I guess they're still just going to be shipping. They'll just be using other services like DHL, UPS. So this will be interesting to see how this plays out. Obviously, Trump is trying to get China to the bargaining table. He's trying to get China to give him some concessions. We'll wait and see what the impact is and what that looks like. But again, the news this morning, the notice right on the USPS website indicating that there is a complete and total suspension of these products, these small packages coming in from China. That notice is still on their website as of right now, and we'll see how long that takes place. This seemingly showed up late last night, at least from, I didn't see it until earlier this morning. So the president has not been asked about it yet in any sort of press gaggle or anything of that nature. So it's not immediately clear what his response it will be if he's asked any questions about it. And I did just get an email a little while ago about the president's schedule for today. So I'll pull that up and see. This is the daily guidance from the White House and the press secretary. Looks like the president is set to meet with Greg Abbott at 2:30. So that's closed to the press. And then at 3:00, he is set to sign the No Men and Women's Sports Executive Order into law. That's going to be taking place at 3:00 in the East Room. So presumably the president will ask some or will answer some questions about that. And then there is also a press briefing at 1:00 this afternoon with Caroline Leavitt. So presumably, as we head into the afternoon hours, we'll learn some additional details about this with the Postal Service. This is going to be an interesting one to track. A lot of U.S. consumers shopping on Temu and Shein. So we'll see what happens, and we'll keep you up to date as it is relevant. Speaking of President Trump, yesterday a meeting with the Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu at the Oval Office, a private meeting, and then a joint press conference, and the president, well, raising some eyebrows with his following statements about Gaza. Take a listen.
The only reason the Palestinians want to go back to Gaza is they have no alternative. It's right now a demolition site. This is just a demolition site. Virtually every building is down. They're living under fallen concrete that's very dangerous and very precarious. They instead can occupy all of a beautiful area with homes and safety, and they can live out their lives in peace and harmony instead of having to go back and do it again. The U.S. will take over the Gaza Strip, and we will do a job with it, too. We'll own it and be responsible for dismantling all of the dangerous unexploded bombs and other weapons on the site, level the site and get rid of the destroyed buildings, level it out, create an economic development that will supply unlimited numbers of jobs and housing for the people of the area. Do a real job, do something different. Just can't go back. If you go back, it's going to end up the same way it has for 100 years.
So that's President Trump yesterday speaking with Benjamin Netanyahu in the White House after their meeting in the Oval Office. And of course, you heard the president say there, we're going to own it. Now, some individuals are indicating that that means that the United States is going to take over the Gaza Strip. That may be the case. However, listening to what he said after that, it doesn't seem to indicate that he has any interest in the United States owning, literally owning the Gaza Strip. To me, it sounded like he was saying, we're going to own the cleanup. We're going to own what he called the demolition of the area, going through and doing this cleanup. Now, does the United States have a vested interest in the Gaza Strip if that takes place? Probably. But some of the outrage this morning on various media outlets indicates that the president says that the United States is going to own Gaza. I don't suspect that that is exactly what the president was indicating. It seemed to me that he was wanting to own the cleanup and own getting it to an area in which individuals could go back there. And you know, this is the kind of BS that you see. This is the top story over at CNN.com this morning. Trump says the U.S. will take over Gaza and Palestinians should leave. It's just such a dishonest headline. In a stunning proposal that has sparked global criticism and confusion, the president did not rule out sending U.S. troops to secure the enclave. I think he made it pretty clear that the United States was going to own the demolition and own the recovery efforts. I'm not sure that the United States would have, and I would not be in favor of the United States owning Gaza. I don't know that that would be in any U.S. best interests at all. But of course, you know, media and their outrage, Democrats and their outrage, pretty typical, trying to gin up something that is probably not. The president was asked some questions about that and asked, was of course, some questions were yelled at him by media, by the press, by the individuals in that room after the fact. And he said, we'll own it and we'll be responsible for dismantling all of the dangerous unexploded bombs and the other weapons on the site. We'll level the site and get rid of all of the destroyed buildings. Just level it out and create an economic development that will supply unlimited number of jobs and housing for people of the area. And so when he says jobs and housing for people of the area, that would indicate, completely going counter to the CNN headline, Trump's going to kick all the Palestinians out, that those individuals would be then living in that area. Now, he did mention for a period of time, yes, those individuals will have to leave. We're going to bulldoze the entire Gaza Strip and work on the recovery efforts. How we're going to pay for that, I have no freaking idea. I'm not sure how the president can justify spending that kind of money that it would likely cost to do that. But nevertheless, media outrage, Democrat outrage. Nothing new, nothing surprising, nothing shocking that you haven't heard before. So it's an interesting idea. We'll see if it comes anything comes of it. If there's any movement on it, it could just be the president kind of just throwing something out there to see what the response is. So we'll keep an eye on that and see how that goes. He is also expected to make his way to have some pretty serious discussions with Iran in the next couple of weeks. He was tweeting or posting on Truth Social about that this morning and was asked a question about that last night. We'll get to that coming up here in just a couple of minutes. I want to let you know about a new sponsor of the show, Ground News. It is a site that I use each and every day, not only in prepping for the Nick Craig Show, but keeping up to date with what's going on around the country, around the world, because staying up to date with these events can be incredibly difficult. It's impossible to go to a single news website, a single news source, and get the full story. And that's exactly why I use Ground News. Ground News is an app and website that combines news from around the world in one place so that you can compare coverage. For every news source, you can see if they have a political bias, how reliable they're reporting in, and who owns them. One of the cool features of Ground News is their blind spot that highlights news disproportionately covered by one side of the political spectrum. You can get news from thousands of sources worldwide in one place and verify your information to know where your news is coming from. I use Ground News every day to prep for the show, and if you subscribe through my link right now, you get 40% off their Vantage subscription plan. It's the one that I use, and it gets you unlimited access to every feature. Visit nickcraig.com/ground to learn more and save 40%. Your subscription not only helps the show, but it supports Ground News as they make the lead media landscape more transparent. Again, get 40% off your subscription to ground.news by visiting nickcraig.com/ground, and we appreciate their support of the Nick Craig Show. So let's quickly talk about Iran. The president putting out a post on Truth Social this morning. It reads as follows. He says, quote, "I want Iran to be a great and successful country, but one that cannot have nuclear weapons. Reports that the United States, working in conjunction with Israel, is going to blow up Iran into smithereens are greatly exaggerated. I would much prefer a verified nuclear peace agreement, which will let Iran peacefully grow and prosper. We should start working on it immediately and have a big Middle East celebration when it is signed and completed. God bless the Middle East." Trump put this out at 6:17 this morning on his Truth Social platform. This is piggybacking off of some comments yesterday in the Oval Office, where the president was signing some executive orders. A question from Peter Ducey in regards to that. Take a listen.
"Why say that you're unhappy to sign it if it's Iran and their proxies who have threatened to retaliate against you and your team by killing you guys for taking out Soleimani?"
"Well, they haven't done that, and that would be a terrible thing for them to do. Not because of me. If they did that, they would be obliterated. That would be the end. I've left instructions. If they do it, they get obliterated. There won't be anything left. And they shouldn't be able to do it. And Biden should have said that, but he never did. I don't know why. Lack of intelligence, perhaps. But he never said it. If that happens to a leader, or close to a leader, frankly, if you had other people involved also, you would call for total obliteration of a state that did it. That would include Iran. So I'm signing this, and it's a very powerful document, but hopefully we're not going to have to use it."
Well, Trump making his stance pretty clear on the issue. If Iran does anything, obviously the question from Peter Ducey trying to assassinate the president or some high-level official within the U.S. government in any sort of retaliation, oh, there's going to be nothing left. We'll obliterate him. We'll obliterate the state of Iran. It will cease to exist. Calling out Biden. Iran is a serious threat. I mean, you look at what has gone on in the Middle East over the last couple of years. Of course, the October the 7th attack, which is the one that's on most people's minds. And you look at Hamas, and you look at their affiliated groups throughout the Middle East. Where are they getting all of their money? Where are they getting the vast majority of their weapons? It's coming straight from Iran. They are the largest state sponsor of terror anywhere in the world. And you're going back to the president's post on Truth Social, saying that he wants the country to be great and successful, but they cannot have a nuclear weapon. There are a lot of threats in the Middle East. There is a lot that Trump has got to deal with in regards to the Middle East. Will he handle all of it perfectly? Probably not. But I can say this confidently, not only as a supporter of President Trump, a big supporter of the president, but as an American. Regardless of what ends up happening, regardless of what deals end up being struck, he talks about, you know, some sort of nuclear peace agreement and a big celebration in the Middle East. I am glad that we have a leader that is willing to do something. Right? And again, not everything that a leader does, use the analogy of a sports team, not everything that the head coach does is perfect. Not everything that the general manager does is perfect. But you want somebody that's willing to make tough decisions and do things over somebody that sits back and does nothing. And that's really the kind of the tail of the tapes between the two administrations. You had Joe Biden and his cadre of idiots that he surrounded himself with, including the vice president, that were just unwilling to do anything. Yeah, I covered a vast majority of the Biden administration on the radio show here in Wilmington. And it was so frustrating. And I mentioned this time and time again, that they were just unwilling to say or do anything, even if it was the wrong thing. Even if I disagreed with the thing that was being done. At least it's something. At least it's some action. But they were unwilling to do it. And it makes sense. We now know more details about the mental capacity, the mental ability of former President Biden. So it makes sense that he was unwilling to do anything. It makes sense that for a large part of the administration, nothing was said or done. Nothing was talked about. Nothing was murmured from the Oval Office. The president was seemingly in hiding for weeks or months at a time. And so while, yes, when you do things, whether it be signing executive orders, being tough on Iran, being tough on China, Mexico, Canada, whatever, at least it's something. It's leadership. And that is a key quality in a president. That is a key quality in somebody that is leading our nation. And I would argue leading any nation. You need somebody that can lead, that can make decisions. Again, even if they're not the right decision all the time. And so I can say confidently this morning, while I will likely disagree with the president in things that he does, which is good and fine, and you should not agree with everything that somebody does, at least things are happening. At least decisions are being made, things are being discussed. And we're not just sitting back, twiddling our thumbs, and allowing all hell to break loose all over the world, which is exactly what happened under Biden. War in Ukraine, war in the Middle East. All because of weak, feckless, useless leadership under the previous administration. So we'll track, again, we'll keep an eye on what goes on in the Middle East over the next couple of years. It'll be an interesting one to follow there. We'll keep an eye on it right here on the Nick Craig Show. I want to remind you the way that you can get access to bonus content, including our daily show notes. Got a lot of stories on the show this morning. It's by visiting my Patreon. It's patreon.com/Nick Craig, where you can get access to those show notes. If you think you're getting some value out of the show each and every weekday morning, whether you're watching live on YouTube, Rumble, and X, or listening to the podcast after the fact, a couple of different tiers available, $5, $10 a month. You can also set a custom amount as well. It is greatly appreciated, and you'll get some of that bonus content available there at patreon.com/Nick Craig. It's patreon.com/Nick Craig. We'll grab a quick break. On the other side, USAID. We are learning additional details this morning about that. Plus a very interesting piece over at the American Prospect, the Democrats' plans to fight Elon Musk. Of course, a very dangerous and destructive Elon Musk. We'll have those details coming up here in just a few minutes. You're watching and listening to The Nick Craig Show live this morning on YouTube, Rumble, and X. And welcome back to The Nick Craig Show, streaming live this morning on YouTube, Rumble, and X. Don't forget that you can listen to the show 24/7 by checking out the podcast. It's available at anywhere you get your shows. Just search for The Nick Craig Show and subscribe there, and you'll get a new show each and every morning. Or visit, and you can listen online at nickcraig.com. So, USAID. We talked about this yesterday morning. USAID. This is seemingly just a money laundering operation for the United States, completely controlled by the left, that Elon Musk, alongside President Donald Trump, have shut down. Blocked entrance to the building earlier this week, causing a mass calamity for the Democrats. And the updated story this morning is that USAID direct hires to be put on leave worldwide, except those deemed as essential. Listen to this. The U.S. Agency for International Development, which is USAID, announced Tuesday that it will place all non-essential direct hire staffers, so these are not contractors, these are individuals that are employed by USAID, that they will be put on, around the world, will be put on leave as the Trump administration cracks down on government waste. The story reads as follows. On Friday, February the 7th, 2025, at 11:59 p.m., so Friday night into Saturday morning, all USA direct hire personnel will be placed on administrative leave globally, with the exception of designated personnel responsible for mission critical functions, core leadership, and specially designated programs, the agency said in a notice posted on their website. USAID noted that personnel deemed essential will be notified by agency leadership by Thursday and that travel arrangements will be made for all other direct hires to return to the United States within 30 days. It reads, the notice says, quote, for USAID personnel currently posted outside the United States, the agency, in coordination with missions and the Department of State, is currently preparing a plan in accordance with all applicable requirements and laws under which the agency would arrange and pay for the return travel to the United States within 30 days and provide for termination of PSC and ISC contact that are not determined to be essential. The agency will consider case-by-case exemptions and return travel extensions based on personnel or family hardship, mobility, safety concerns, or other reasons. Thank you for your service. So, of course, this move follows a shutdown of numerous USAID programs and the layoff of thousands of workers as a result of President Trump's 90-day pause on U.S. foreign aid development assistance. This is being led by Elon Musk. DOGE, the Department of Government Efficiency. They took USAID's website offline over the weekend as they worked to roll back the agency. Trump, as we mentioned the comments earlier in the week, quote, USAID has been run by a bunch of radical lunatics and we're getting them out. And everybody, at least within the Trump administration, seems to be in agreement that it needs to be shut down. And NBC News is absolutely freaking out about this in an article they wrote. The article has most of the same verbiage there from the article over at the New York Post. It talks about, you know, it being shut down on Friday, direct hires put on administrative leave. The USAID's workforce totals more than 10,000 direct hires and types of contractors known as personnel service contractors, the research service said in a January report. Around two-thirds of the staff work overseas. Many Democratic lawmakers have expressed outrage, calling it illegal, and saying that USAID was established under a law passed by Congress. Of course, NBC News has to put in, some Republicans have voiced criticism as well. Of course, right? Because then it's a bipartisan issue, right? As long as some Republican lawmakers have voiced criticism. NBC News says USAID has delivered billions of dollars in humanitarian aid overseas, funding that advocates say provides a critical lifeline to more than 100 countries at only a small fraction of the overall federal budget. This is how they justify what they do. Oh, it's just a small fraction. Well, it's not like a large portion of the U.S. budget, so we should just be able to continue to do it because it's a small fraction. It's a small amount. And I always like to equate the stuff that we talk about in regards to government and governmental spending back to what you and I as everyday people have to deal with. As normal individuals that go to work, collect a paycheck, and have to manage our finances. You're familiar with the idea, and you've probably had to do it at least in some extent over the last 4 years, of cutting something back. Whether that be not going out to dinner every weekend, maybe just doing it one or two weekends out of the month. That would be a small cutback that you would make to recuperate costs because things were so much more expensive, right? That's a realistic sacrifice that people have had to make over the last couple of years due to rising prices. The grocery store, things that you're buying, interest rates on cars or houses, whatever. That is a realistic cut, a realistic sacrifice that people have made. But see, NBC News and Democrats say, you know, but we provide this aid, but it's only a small fraction of the overall budget. Yeah, only going out to dinner 2 weekends out of the month instead of four, that's only a small fraction as well. Maybe you save $200. You know, just couple hundred bucks, right? That's not going to probably make or break your entire financial future, but it helps, right? It's all part of the goal of being fiscally responsible, which is something that the government is incapable of doing. They are incapable of scaling anything back. Aqua Blue is commenting over on our Rumble stream this morning, where the show streams live each and every weekday morning starting at 7 o'clock, and says, I believe that there are some programs through USAID that are viable, but probably 60 to 80% are not. I think you're spot on with that. And I think that is what you're going to see with USAID being essentially sucked into the State Department under Secretary of State Marco Rubio. The programs that are valuable for the United States to provide, of which there are plenty, I'm sure, should continue to operate. And those programs likely will continue to operate. But we looked at the list yesterday that was provided by the White House of some of the absurd things that USAID is spending money on. And I just can't wrap my head around how spending $47,000 on a transgender opera in Colombia is a good use of taxpayer dollars. Or $32,000 for a transgender comic book in Peru. How about $2 million for sex changes and LGBT activism in Guatemala? I mean, this is what NBC News says it's okay to continue to do because it's just a small fraction of the budget. It's just a small amount of money. We should continue to spend $6 million a year to fund tourism in Egypt because it's just a small fraction. This is why this kind of gaslighting, this kind of verbiage from media outlets and Democrats, one and the same, like NBC News, USAID delivers billions of dollars in humanitarian aid overseas, funding that advocates say provide a critical lifeline to more than 100 countries at only a small fraction of the overall federal budget. That last line right there is precisely the issue. It is precisely why we are $36 trillion in debt. Because the federal government never scales anything back. A program spawns up, the program continues in perpetuity, and the only way to justify your existence is to continue to ask for more money. Because if not, then your budget gets rolled back or your budget gets cut. So you make things up, you manufacture things to do. Which, I will note, does not provide any intrinsical value for the U.S. economy. The federal government does not create value for the U.S. economy. Now, they provide paychecks, sure. They pump money into the U.S. economy in regards to government salaries, absolutely. But in terms of producing for the U.S. economy, the federal government does not. It's not a function that they provide. It's not a function that they succeed in doing. And so it may only be a small fraction, absolutely. But when you're $36 trillion in debt and significant changes have to be made, significant cuts and sacrifice needs to be made, everybody's got to play a part. And for USAID, who was actively working against the current administration to try and stonewall them from coming in and seeing what was going on, I think they deserve everything that they're getting right now. And the outrage continues. Here is Representative LaMonica McIver yesterday outside of USAID in Washington, D.C. The audio is a little distorted here because she's screaming into the microphone. It's pretty typical. But this is what she has to say in regards to what's going on right now.
We will not take this. We will fight back.
Fight back. Fight back.
And as I close out, because I know we've been out here for a long time,
yes.
And goddamn it, shut down the Senate.
Yeah.
We are at war. Anytime a person can pay $250 million into a campaign and they be given access, full access to the Department of Treasury of the United States of America, we are at war.
God damn it, shut down the Senate. We're at war. Sure. Whatever you say, Representative McIver. Shut down the Senate. Why would we shut down the Senate? I always like to remind individuals, because it kind of proves the Democrat hypocrisy. Elon Musk was the darling of the left with Solar City, with Tesla, with all of these great new technologies that he was introducing. Democrats love driving their electric vehicles. They love their Teslas. Now, of course, they're posting on Reddit about how they're selling their car. It's so brave to sell your car to Carvana to give the middle finger to Elon Musk, even though you've already bought the car, you stupid jackass. But nevertheless, the darling of the left. But because Democrats continue to move so far to the radical side of the political spectrum, because they push themselves so far to the left, they essentially red-pilled Elon Musk. The group in which he was in favor with now hates him and claims that all you have to do is donate $250 million and you can get access to the White House. Well, that's kind of how campaigns work. And I don't think Elon Musk donated the money and got access to the White House. I think Elon Musk has been incredibly hell-bent on getting spending under control, and he has been tasked with doing that. And of course, now you hear all about this treasury system that Elon Musk has access to and the detrimental nature of this system. Oh yeah, like the government doesn't have systems that people have access to. Now, I'm supposed to believe that this system is seen by like one person and one person only. And Elon Musk is in there doing what? Looking at my social security number? Going in there and what? Checking out my home address? Seeing how much money I'm getting from the federal government, of course, of which is none. The outrage is ridiculous, and it continues. Here's an article by Emma Jansen over at prospect.org. The Democrats' plans to fight Elon Musk. After a slow start, Democrats begin to resist the government takeover. Now, you'll remember, I mentioned this yesterday morning. Trump is doing things, and in Musk and his team, they are doing things at such a rapid rate that Democrats are unable to hone in on one thing. And I don't know if it's being done purposefully. I hope it is, because it's a genius strategy. Trump is moving things so rapidly within the government, is doing so many things constantly, that they are incapable of targeting something and dealing with it. They are completely scattered in regards to the Trump administration and what they're doing. So let's just read through a little bit of this article published back on Monday, February 3rd. Over the weekend, Elon Musk and his team of 20-somethings functionally shut down the U.S. Agency for International Development, USAID, which has been the country's foreign aid department since JFK was president. It's a move that exemplifies the immense power Musk has been given. On an X Space Monday, Musk said that President Trump, quote, agreed we should shut it down, a concerning insight into who is actually calling the shots. As Musk dismantles the agency that provides $40 billion in critical funding around the world. Now, NBC News said it's just a small fraction. Prospect.org saying it's $40 billion. So you pick and choose. As Musk dismantles the agency that provides $40 billion in critical funding around the world, a potential prelude to unconstitutionally deleting other spending he doesn't like has been appropriated by Congress, Democrats have been mustering a response. In an email to the House Democratic Caucus Monday morning, Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries laid out a strategy for the party. Many of his 10 bullet points were continuations of work that's already being done, but he did lay out plans to meet the moment. Jeffries told the caucus that Democrats will introduce a bill to prevent unlawful access to the federal payment system that contains confidential information about Social Security and Medicare recipients, nonprofits, businesses, and federal contractors. They're freaking out about this federal payment system. What about like the IRS system? Wouldn't the IRS have all of this same information? They sure as hell have your Social Security number. You file your federal taxes with it. Nonprofits, businesses, contract. I mean, anybody that's submitting a tax return is submitting all of this information to the IRS. Democrats didn't seem to care when they were hiring 88,000 new IRS agents. Democrats don't seem to care that people have access to the IRS system. But of course, they're trying to make it out as if this payment system is some system that nobody in the world has ever had access to. And Elon Musk is in there just playing around with it. No, he's been tasked with getting government spending under control. He's been tasked with looking under the hood and figuring out where the hell all of our money is going. And the system seems to have a lot of that information, so he's looking there. Musk has reportedly gained access to this Department of the Treasury payment system, allowing him access to sensitive data about Americans and potentially tampering with the flow of $6 trillion worth of payments that goes through the system. There doesn't seem to have been any indication that Musk has changed the flow of money. There has not been any information that has come forward to show, to allude to, that Elon Musk has stopped money flowing to any U.S. individual or group. This is just gaslighting and fear-mongering by the left, including Emma Jansen over at Prospect.org. After clashing with Musk about access to the payment system, Treasury's highest-ranking career official, David Liebreich, left the department. Other senior Treasury officials are reportedly on administrative leave after trying to keep Doge out of the system. Well, they should be on leave. Not because I think people should lose their job. Not because I think people should be fired. Doge has a directive from the President of the United States to deal with federal spending. And when you've got Treasury officials that are actively working against the current administration, the same story with USAID. When you have government officials that are actively working against the administration, those individuals have to be relieved of their duties. These people within the Treasury Department were not elected. These people were appointed. They are government bureaucrats. And if you want to actively go against the current administration, you are going to be fired. The same way that if your boss tells you to do something and you tell your boss no, you're probably going to lose your job. Been there, done that. You just because you're morally against what somebody is doing, just because you hate Elon Musk, just because you hate Donald Trump, does not give you carte blanche to actively block the things that this administration is trying to implement. You deserve to lose your job. I have no apology for you. I have no sympathy. I'm not sorry that that's happening. You deserve it. Now, here's the thing. If you don't like what they're doing, if you don't like what's going on, then resign. If you don't like that Elon Musk, look at what this the highest ranking Treasury official did. He left the department. That's good. That's what he should do. If he's adamantly against what's going on and cannot in good faith do what is being asked, then you have to leave. Maybe that's not the best situation, but it is. Hakeem Jeffries also set a line in the sand using the March 14th federal funding deadline, telling Democrats that he, quote, made clear to House Republican leadership that any effort to steal taxpayer money from the American people, end Medicaid as we know it, or defund programs important to everyday Americans as contemplated by the illegal White House Office of Management and Budget Order must be choked off in the upcoming government funding bill, if not sooner. The same fear-mongering tactics from the left. Trump and Elon Musk, nobody has said they're getting rid of Medicaid or Medicare or Social Security. Nobody has said this. You guys ran on that kind of same nonsense in the campaign. It didn't work. It's not working now. Meanwhile, several congressional Democrats joined protesters on Monday outside of USAID, which is empty after staffers were told to stay out. Why were some of those staffers told to stay out? Well, because of the same situation. They were actively blocking DOGE and the Trump administration from trying to accomplish their goal. You don't have the right to do that. And the article ends like this. In the whirlwind of Trump's first 2 weeks in office, Democrats have rightly come under fire for their passive response to the administration's assaults on the government. After the now rescinded Office of Management and Budget memo put a pause on all federal spendings, Jeffries scheduled an emergency meeting for the next afternoon. The more concrete threat of withholding nominations and grinding the business of the Senate to a halt, especially with the government shutdown looming next month and the nation's borrowing limit just after that, marks a change in the party's willingness to play hardball to defend the government from Musk. Defend the government from Musk? What does that even mean? He's working with the current administration. Like, see, this is what's wrong with the left. They believe that they're the ones that are supposed to be in control. She says it right here. Defend the government from Musk. Musk is the government, lady. Trump is the government. You guys lost. We are in control now. We won. You lost. It's not your government anymore. It was never your government. It is a government by the people, for the people. Your awful policies and ideas caused the American people to revolt against the Democrat Party, giving Donald Trump, J.D. Vance, and Republicans in the House and the Senate majorities within our government. They're in charge now. We don't have to apologize to you. We don't have to placate to your whims and wishes. We don't have to listen to your screaming outside the steps of USAID about how we're at war and shut down the Senate. You guys lost. And we have no obligation to work with you. And we shouldn't. This last paragraph in this article really goes to show you the smug nature of the left. To defend the government from Musk. Yeah, you lost. Try harder next time. Maybe run a candidate that can win. Maybe have ideas and policies that resonate with the American people. You guys lost. Get the hell over it. We're in charge now. I know it's a really hard thing for you to wrap your head around, but you guys demagogued the right over the last 4 years. You raked and drugged Donald Trump through the mud and all of his supporters through the mud for 4 years, and we won. You guys lost. We're in charge. Get over it. We're calling the shots now, not you. So sad, too bad.
defend the government from Musk. Oh. Oh, the humanity. We got to defend the government from Musk. He's taking over.
Ridiculous outrage. Completely nonsensical outrage. But exactly what you would expect. Again, because these individuals believe that they're the ones that are rightfully in charge. They believe that they're the ones that should be solely calling the shots. Even though Republicans won, even though voters sent a message to the current administration that we were not satisfied with their ideas, not satisfied with the things that they were doing, they still believe they're in charge. She says it literally at the end of the article. We have to defend the government against Musk, indicating they're the ones in charge of it. Well, guess what? You're not. See you later. Turning our attention this morning to some news in North Carolina, expecting a busy day across the North Carolina General Assembly. Republican lawmakers will be back in Raleigh coming up later on this afternoon, where they were going to be dealing with some legislation in regards to hurricane relief for Western North Carolina. Republican lawmakers plan to debate a proposal, a $500 million proposal, 2 o'clock this afternoon, as they have revealed their plans in legislative documents. This comes just a day after Democrat Governor Josh Stein called for more than $1 billion in immediate Helene aid from the state government. The article over at WRAL notes Democrats and Republicans have disagreed on the exact amount of money that the state government should spend, as well as on which recovery needs to be prioritized. However, they say there is broad bipartisan consensus that more needs to be done. The storm Helene did an estimated $60 billion worth of damage in Western North Carolina. Several times more than any other hurricane in state history, and the federal government is expected to lead a lot of those recovery efforts, as we've talked about some uneasiness and some major questions in regards to the future of FEMA and some of the funding there. This is what I'll say about the hurricane relief in North Carolina. Stein's asking for $1 billion. The General Assembly seems poised to spend about $500 million, at least right now. And by the way, the name of the legislation is called the Disaster Recovery Act of 2025, Part 1. So that obviously is very much opening the door, and it seems very plausible that we would see more of these relief bills, more of these relief efforts as the year goes by. And it makes sense, and I understand that Republicans in the General Assembly have some questions about hurricane relief in the future. They have already watched and seen what happens when the state allocates a whole bunch of money to disaster relief. And unfortunately, we've seen that in Eastern North Carolina, as individuals have been waiting since 2016 to get back in their homes. So the fact that state lawmakers are not just out there and willing and ready to write a $1 billion check makes sense. There needs to be very, very close eyes put on this money. We cannot afford another situation like we saw with NCOR in the western half of the state. The citizens in the western half of the state can't deal with it. The taxpayers don't have the financial footing to deal with it. It's a bad situation overall. So we'll see what comes of this discussion in the General Assembly today. I'll be watching that hearing later on this afternoon and bring you details coming up tomorrow morning right here on the Nick Craig Show. Also coming up tomorrow morning, the FCC is launching a probe into Soros-backed radio stations. That's going to be an interesting story. We'll cover that tomorrow. Plus, expecting some more details out of the White House, some details here in North Carolina. We'll have a busy Thursday morning show coming up for you as well. Don't forget that you can subscribe and support the show financially and get access to bonus content by visiting patreon.com/Nick Craig. That's patreon.com/Nick Craig. That's going to do it for a Wednesday edition of the Nick Craig Show, streaming live this morning on YouTube, Rumble, and X. Have a great day. We're back with you tomorrow morning.